So, second rate first mate, John, do you remember the last episode of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when they left the house and the Jeffersons ended up buying the house?
No, man, I didn't make it all the way to the end, even in reruns. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, let me ask you this then.
Okay.
Do you remember when the Happy Days
game... I know how to do the dance, the Carlton dance. But
No. We're not going to go there today. But earlier when the Happy Days crew would end up on Laverne and Shirley or vice versa.
Oh, the spinoffs. The what would you call
crossover.
That? The crossover event. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Sort of like Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, and Chicago... PD, maybe? I don't know.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
I think they did this on daytime soaps as well.
Right,
but
yeah.
This is going to be our first ever crossover episode because we are welcoming to our show and hope to be welcomed to his show. We have none other than Mr. Hotshot himself, John O'Grady from Sheltered at Sea. Welcome, John.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Nice to be here.
Yep, this is your second appearance.
Nice to be aboard.
No one's ever done that before. All right, good.
Yes.
All right.
So, John, what are you Johns doing here today?
Well, I'm here just to kind of learn. John O'Grady is here to bring the meat of the sandwich. So, John, what do you got? What are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about Christian contemporary music and yacht rock. Really bedfellows, to a certain extent. They are kind of in partnership and kind of developed along the same lines. So going back into like the original timeline of yacht rock, 76, 84, where we roughly define it, right? There was also this kind of bubbling up in the early 70s into the mid 70s of Christian music finally starting to arrive in contemporary music. Thus the term Christian contemporary music.
CCM.
There's an interesting crossover too, going back to crossovers, between the rise of CCM and the sort of contemporaneous rise of yacht rock, even though we didn't know that's what was happening at the time. But because of that, we're going to explore some of those connections. And just in case anyone's completely not clear yet, we are going to start the discussion today, but we are going to continue the discussion on a future episode of Sheltered at Sea, which is coming up this Saturday. What time do you appear on Yacht Rock Miami so people can put it in their calendars?
We're on 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Cool.
9 to 12 on Yacht Rock Miami.
So where we leave off today, tune back in to Yacht Rock Miami this Saturday at 9. Okay.
Righto.
Cool. So we're talking about the CCM as the acronym, which being from Detroit, I thought this was going to be a hockey episode, but let's go with what you got. So how did this all start? Some people today call it Yacht Jesus or Ark Rock, but you know, to take all of that aside, talk about just contemporary Christian music as a genre.
Well, its origins really kind of, if you look at the late 60s, Woodstock era, like, you know, the kind of hippie movement, you know, I think there was kind of a lag in what was going on there. They'd kind of gotten the bubble kind of burst and kind of what seems to be Christian CCM's kind of thing to catch on late and get into something. So they kind of picked up late on that scene. I think a lot of people liked that music, but they were Christian and it wasn't okay to be like a fan of Led Zeppelin or be a fan of something like that. And also be a young Christian. It just wasn't something that was acceptable in the churches from what I can tell. And I'm not speaking for all denominations and things, but I'm saying that seems to be the general message. But there were young artists, young talented artists that were into it. Like they really liked what was going on in contemporary music and wanted to try to merge the worlds of Christian music, take it out of the folksy, you know, long hair campfire stuff, which was even kind of on the edges anyways at the time, and push it into a more contemporary sound. And it really started again with like groups like the Imperials, who were working with Elvis in the early 70s. I think they're one of the first bands that really people noticed. And they were also one of the first bands in Christian music to cross over and bring in black artists. So the Imperials were really pushing that umbrella, which I think was also pushing the sound of the day too, and allowing it to become more acceptable in the Christian contemporary world.
And where do you, we had Chris Christian on a while back, and he talked about, I don't know that he was kind of pointing to himself and Brown Bannister as who is his producer and friend as at least one of the sort of flames that started this fire, maybe coming from a different place. Because he, as if people don't know, Chris Christian came out of a church in Texas, eventually was given some production deals to find Christian artists to produce. The first one that he launched out of his very own church was Amy Grant.
Yeah.
Who?
And that was, she was extremely popular. And the thing is, so the connection really is back to Omardian again. Omardian worked with the Imperials. Chris Christian's first real big run at CCM was with the Imperials.
And Chris eventually went to the West Coast and did some popular work there. So yep. he was connected to the right. West Coast music culture.
But he was there in what would be considered like the golden age of like Yacht Rock too. Yes. I mean, that's really where he developed where he came kind of forward. So really it starts with Marty in the early 70s. And as it developed, guys like him got a chance, young hot producers got a chance to work with these bands who were already very, very successful at that. I mean, the best Imperials album, I mean, arguably, I guess, whoever you talk to, but in the Yacht Rock circles is one that I think there's actually a couple acceptable, songs that are actually on the Yacht Rock list are from the Imperials. And they were produced at that time with like Chris Christian and those guys. So he's behind that. So, and Michael Omardian.
Why don't we play a little bit of Living Without Your Love by the Imperials?
And also to be noted as sort of possibly a driving force behind Michael Omardian himself was his wife, Stormy Omardian, yes. who is one of the, and still one is the most successful writers of Christian materials, particularly this Praying for Your Husband, Praying for Your Son series of books that she's done. And so they certainly had this in the household. And so you could see why Michael was motivated to get behind these artists from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and I think the other side of this, too, outside of the Omardians, and again, they obviously did stuff later in the 70s together, too, and put out some music collectively and kept doing that probably still putting out music. But Andre Crouch is another one name I kept finding in all these bubbles, and he was a gospel R&B type artist, but into the, 70s and early 80s, he started pushing that sound, too. So as a black artist, that's where the other bubble is coming. So you're saying you're seeing these worlds merge,
right.
Like you were seeing in, contemporary music. You're seeing bands like War come out in the 70s. You're seeing these bands where they're starting to Earth, Wind, and Fire. You're seeing Chicago where there's some crossover. You're seeing black and white musicians working together, which obviously influenced, even Steely Dan and stuff. I mean, that's where they really got their sound was when they started merging those jazz worlds, those blues worlds, gospel worlds into, what was, rock music, I guess, at the time, too.
Yeah, and if you're going to take your message into a contemporary area, you're going to take it into the sound that is happening at the time, which is why we say so much of the CCM sounds like Yacht Rock in a lot of ways.
Right. And again, it's really dragging behind, what was, contemporary artists were using gospel, from, the 60s and, even late 50s, they were pulling that in. They were already getting grief about it, but luckily it picked up so well in the, popular sense that it didn't matter. But it took the Christianity movement a little bit more time to catch up to all that was happening. But they'd already been getting their music stolen for a while, really, out of the gospel scenes and stuff, too, which is really interesting.
And aside that Chris Christian also talked about, a lot of the artists that weren't necessarily expressly doing Christian music were also writing what they called you songs, you in quotes, which essentially what they would do is replace the word you with God. So you're writing a song that may sound like a love song, and really it's meant to be a tribute to God. The most popular one probably ever was You Light Up My Life.
No, absolutely. And it's funny, I learned in the early 70s when this Christian movement first sparked up, groups like the Doobie Brothers, no pun intended, say sparking up, but they had Jesus Is Just All Right.
That's right.
Groups that were kind of gravitating towards that idea because they saw that there was some development of popularity and weren't Christian groups, but they were exploring and kind of pushing back in that territory because there was an appeal there as well. So again, this whole thing was kind of, again, working up against what was eventually the Yacht Rock stuff, the proto Yacht Rock into the Yacht Rock era. And I think, again, you bring up a guy like Chris Christian and Michael Omardian too, where they were the fathers of kind of that development and that relationship of those two sounds, which is why most of the stuff I realize now as I've dug back in is really from Omardian and Chris Christian. A lot of my favorite albums that are of that era and of that CCM stuff all come from those guys. which makes total sense now.
Yeah, and if you've just joined us recently to the podcast, we did interview Chris Christian, which is one of the most fascinating interviews of one of the most fascinating people that if you never heard of him, you got to go back and just see how his tentacles spread throughout the industry, touching on Olivia Newton-John to Dallas Cowboys to just about
everything. He was so good at, I mean, as a fan, I listen to your guys' show as well, but he was very good at like bringing it down to basic terms too. Some of your guests are a little bit more
sure.
They cast a wider net, so to speak, and it's hard keeping up with them.
No doubt,
he was really good at narrowing his focus.
Apologies to Mr. Graydon in advance.
It's not a knock on Graydon. It was a great episode.
I set you up for that.
Wire Choir and all that stuff.
Yeah, another name that comes up a lot on this podcast and is in your notes is Abe Laboriel.
Mm-hmm.
What is his connection to CCN?
He was one of those first crossover artists that actually started moving back into that scene. So I think maybe because of what he does and what he brings to the sound. I mean, obviously he's not as an invasive of an instrument and you know, instrumentalist, but I think he's one of those guys that must've been familiar with Omardian or friends with Omardian. Mm-hmm. So Omardian pulled him in and got him into a bunch of early, like kind of crossover tracks. I mean, so many to list, but he was one of those first artists that moved the other way, like from the yacht rock, Steely Dan type stuff back into like what was happening in the Christian sound, which again had influence as they were able to pull all yacht rock artists, which that ended up happening like in the mid 70s. They were able to find that sound in production. And I think that's what Omardian and Christian did amongst a couple others like Brown Bannister was find that modern production sound. They weren't just good Christian producers. They were just good producers that made stuff sound really, really good. That gave CCM the edge. You know, it gave them something that made them competitive.
Yeah. They understood also that the message that they have is a positive one. It's meant to draw you in. So you're not looking for shock value. You're not looking to blow somebody's face off with, you know, you're looking for something that is, to use a better, maybe a worse term, but safe, you know, that would allow the message to be carried. We know that the producers and the performers, the session musicians, all understood the one primary goal is to service the song and the message of the song properly. So these really were the right kind of people to have playing on your record because they're not looking to show what they can do. They're looking to service the song.
They're also session cats. I mean, we always go back to that, I'm sure, a lot of times, right? They're like, how much? You're going to pay me what? Yeah, I'll be on that album.
That's true.
I'll come and lay a track and I'll leave. And it didn't really matter what the message was. You know, it wasn't counterproductive to what they were trying to do as artists or musicians.
Right. But they understood that their role in a song was to let the lead vocal do whatever it's going to do. They weren't going to judge on it. They were just going to service what what the song was trying to do. Yeah. So who is one of the guys I see posted more often than anyone else? For whatever reason, is Roby Duke or is it Roby? What do you know?
I've looked up interviews and people pronounce it both ways.
Okay,
I always think it's Roby Duke just because it looks like. I mean, Robbie's a normal name, but I've heard people say it both ways in different. So, and he doesn't seem to correct people about it. I've noticed in these interviews. So, but again, well-known artist. He doesn't show up as much as I would expect. But when you look at like liner notes on his first two like big albums, they're just like loaded with yacht personnel. And I arguably said this to people usually after a couple drinks, like. I would put him up against anybody in the era, those albums, in my opinion. Like, I mean, up against, I'm talking Loggins, I'm talking McDonald, I'm talking about all of them. I just think I think his albums are that good. Now, there's some cheese on it, but they all have cheese. Like, every single Yacht Rock album, it's not like it's a Yacht Rock album. There's not many truly pure Yacht Rock albums. There's albums that have good Yacht Rock songs on them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But his album has like five or six tracks, but he looks silly.
It does.
I was going to say, he looks uncomfortable on the cover. So already, by
passes
Alex
the Juan
G's.
Love test. Yeah.
I guess it's Juan. I didn't know if that's Juan or Alex. But so why don't, can we pick a song by Roby and give people a taste of maybe Seasons of Change?
Seasons of Change. Deep in my heart. I'm a natural man.
Here's my only problem with Roby/Roby. Well, two problems. One is that we can't pronounce his name.
And it's not Reggie Roby either.
Yeah.
He was cool.
There's a deep cut.
Miami Dolphins reference.
We got to get his catalog on Spotify because I want to mix it in with my Yacht Rock and I can't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's the challenge. I mean, I have his albums. You know, I went out and bought them and tracked them down and Yeah, it's YouTube.
So I have a question for maybe both of you. Maybe it's unfair to generalize, but in this case, would you say as a general rule, these artists were looking to use their platform to spread the word? Or like one of my favorite bands nowadays is Need to Breathe, which they will tell you they're not a Christian rock band. They're a rock band made up of Christians.
Right.
So, yeah. And at times they certainly write about their faith. But what was the general rule, do you think? If you think of it,
I don't think Amy there was. Grant. I think it's regional. I think it's also like probably what depended on what where they were in their faith, where they belonged. But I mean, they were on labels, I think, that were trying to bring in listeners. But I think through that, they were also trying to do like work to bring in potential people that would have interest in faith. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they're all very different. I think some of them like to separate them. It seems like some of them like to compartmentalize it a little bit more. Mm. It seems like a maturity thing, too, I've noticed. See a lot of artists where they kind of like they got through their 30s, 20s and 30s. Guys that came out of the yacht rock era, too. And they were like, OK, too many drugs, too much partying. I need to go back to God before my life.
We need some redemption.
It's exactly what it is. I mean, look at like Mr. Mister. I mean, you guys talked about it on your show a couple times. Like that, those guys were in that scene. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how deep they were in that scene, but they were in that scene. And I think that 80s was that kind of like coming out and like all these guys were getting divorced. Mm-hmm. All these guys were, you know, coming out of these like party kicking scenes drugs. And yeah. And so I think that's part of it. So I think everyone has a different story to tell in CCM. That's a good question, but they all have different motivations, I think, for what they're trying to do. But I think probably, like, if anything in music, it's the labels. Who are they trying to push it towards? Like, is it youth? Is it certain demographics? Like, how are they going to try to, you know, reach out to them through the music? And you know that by usually how hardcore they are about it.
Right.
You know, are they using the word you or are they using the word Jesus? Are they, right. you know, right. like, what's their approach? And I think the heavy-handed ones, you're going to know who they are right away. They stand out. I think some of them others probably realize there's a softer way to do it that still yields the same result.
John, I was going to go back to what you said because I think it bears repeating. Is if you wanted to find a genre that was more accessible and friendly and upbeat and sort of not in your face, you couldn't ask for a better genre than yacht rock, which again, didn't exist at the time. But it's like right. this is perfect. It's no wonder these two things merged.
Yes.
Yeah, it took a while for metal and stuff to become part of CCM, but it eventually did. You know, like in the late 70s, like I think bands that were probably picking up on like Zeppelin and stuff came later, like Petra. You'll see a lot of them show up in CCM talk. They were harder. But that took to almost the 80s before that started to be acceptable in CCM.
Yeah, who was the Christian metal band that got the Striper? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So those bands all came in the 80s because I think it was finally okay because it gotten big enough and more accessible that they finally allowed it to become part of the scene. Is that it took that long though. That's so to show you from like the early 70s through like the 80s to finally get there where they were all like, okay, you can play hard guitar and it's still about God. It's okay.
Yeah, I do. I know some guys that play in the church band that I played in for a while and they came into it a lot of times through whether it be Striper or other bands that were playing, whether it be hard rock, you know, there's some bands that if you stripped off the lyrics, it sounded like Blink 182, you know, like that pop punk thing. And yet that was their way into Christian music.
Yeah, I went to Cornerstone years ago. It's a Christian music festival. It's been around for a long time. And they had ska bands there. Sure. They had metal bands. There was a bunch of alternative rock. It was in the early 90s, so it was alternative rock bands everywhere. They loved it, you know. Well,
Creed.
First time I ever heard the term Jesus Freak was at Cornerstone.
Okay.
And that was an old term. That came out of the 60s. That was like the early 70s.
I know,
that
it
term
was.
Arrived. Yeah. And so it was like a term. Like I thought it was a bad thing, but it wasn't. It was a good thing. It was like, we're those weird people that like Jesus and also like rock and roll. You know, that's really what it meant. And it was cool.
Yep.
Is there a way of being trying to connect to CCM, I think, that audience in a way, too?
John, you mentioned Andre Crouch.
Yeah.
Not a household name probably for most people, right. but you know, CCM, yeah, it would be. Give us a sense for Andre's work and give us a song that maybe we should snip.
Well, he did an album called Don't Give Up in the 80s that was a little bit more in that. It's those guys came later to the party in general as far as the yacht rock sound, but that's one where he really kind of stood out. And I'm trying to remember the names off that album. I know I sent you guys a couple off the top of my head. I don't know all of them.
Got Me Some Angels was one.
And he's wearing his members only jacket. Looking good on that album cover too.
Straight from the mall.
at that point, it doesn't matter what the music sounds like.
No, but
it's got
the,
rock.
Look at the liner notes again on that stuff, and you're like, holy geez, there's a lot of these dudes on this album, man. Again, like that Robbie Duke album, like Paul Clark album, like some of the things I shared with you guys kind of ahead of time, there's just, they just popped up on a lot of things. You know, like you saw these names over and over again of guys that were yacht rock guys showing up playing, and the sound is there.
Yeah, and to your point, you had, the, as you said, maturity. Yeah. Not necessarily entirely, but Christian music in parts of a regular artist, it would have been considered a secular artist, and then delved into the Christian stuff at one time. You have Aretha, you have Dion, Al Green, yeah. Which, yes, that makes sense. Van Morrison, Billy Preston on that list. So that's cool.
BJ Thomas was another one that pops up as being like, he made a conversion. And then when he made a conversion, that was a big deal. Like he went from being a normal, a non-CCM artist to being a CCM artist. That was a big deal in the industry.
He worked with Chris Christian. Yep.
Yep. And they pulled those artists in, I think. And that what's gave the CCM credibility too, which allowed them to get more money to make better albums, better production.
Correct.
CCM becoming more popular.
Yes.
That seems to be the line again that I traced from the beginning and end of it all. So again, over time as it matured, like Yacht Rock too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays you couldn't do what these guys were doing in CCM or in Yacht Rock, which is to bring in 12 studio guys to work on an album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just can't do it anymore. It doesn't work that way, at least not in normal circles, unless you have a lot of money behind you.
Well, they say what the budget for Steely Dan's Asia was $1 million, and that was 1970 what? And then let's factor in the cost of what that would be today. I mean, it's outrageous.
Yeah, the making of that album and that video on YouTube. Yeah. I know you guys have seen it too, where they talk about the making of that album. I mean, bringing six guitar players to work on one solo, you know?
Yeah, yeah, just the solo. When you think about that, because also one of the biggest, when Fleetwood Mac did Tusk, that was another $1 million budget. And I think that's, like, we're talking late 70s. That has to be a ton of money now. I don't know the math, but I could look it up.
Well, CCM was always operating on a budget anyways, even as big as they ever got. I mean, they were always going to be not able to keep up with the big boys because they didn't because they were usually personally financed by somebody. You know, that seems to be the thing I noticed too. Like, somebody would get enough money to start a label, which is not the same as like all these established labels that came out of the even turn of the century when music started to be produced. So there's different ways they had to create it too, but they were able to at least pay artists to come in and work on their albums. You know, that probably worked well for them. Come in, we'll give you $500, play a solo, leave. You know, worked well for CCM as a model.
As an aside, $1 million in 1980 would be $3.7 million today. Wow. I don't think there's many artists that can get a $3.7 million budget for a record in 2023.
No. Nope. I got to ask maybe both of you a question, and because I am going to cede my time in the lightning round to the senator from Wisconsin this week.
Oh, yeah.
Are there artists? I have one in particular that I stumbled upon yesterday. So this is kind of like a buried treasure. John, you know, I've been getting into Kool and the Gang lately, mm-hmm. listening to their records. And at the end of one of their records, maybe you can help me remember which one it was. There's a song that's clearly written to and about God.
Yes.
Is that September Love?
Well, that was a common thing in the R&B records. I learned that, very common to have a religious song as the last song on the record to keep their connected to their gospel roots. Absolutely.
So did the Commodores do that? I'm just turning off the top of my head. Who else? Earth, Wind, and Fire, those types.
Jesus is Love was a huge hit, actually, for the Commodores.
So was it typical, you said, at the end? So they're burying their treasure at the end of the record?
That would typically? Be
true. Yeah. Okay. So they did that. And again, you'd hear them on like gospel shows. I used to listen to gospel shows on Sunday morning. In Milwaukee, they do one every morning where they play gospel music, and you'd hear artists that were popular, and they drop one of their songs on there. And they, so again, it was always one of those things that they just did, even if they weren't considered Christian artists,
right?
To have a song on there for mom, you know, kind of thing too. Yep. I think that was part of it. Is what I how I heard it described.
Yeah.
And so, can I just have permission to just go off the map slightly, and then I will be done talking for the rest of the episode? I mentioned Need to Breathe. It. I just think it's the coolest thing in the world that they have written and produced. The only, maybe, but certainly the coolest song about Holy Thursday. Jackie, it's so cool. It's Jesus in the garden talking to God, and it's called The Garden.
Won't you take this cup from me? 'Cause fear has stolen all my sleep. If tomorrow means my death, pray you'll save their souls. With
have you ever heard that song, John? I know John Nixon has because I make him listen to it every
Thursday. I have not. I haven't not heard this band either, so I'll have to do some digging after we're done here and catch up.
Oh, come on. All right, I'm going to send you some stuff.
I can't help it. I'm always slumming over in Yacht Rock Worlds and City Pop and, you know, CCM stuff. I don't know. Modern.
Well, you're yacht. Slumming it on Out of the Main today. So what can we expect in the next episode of Shelter at Sea where we're going to dive deeper into this topic?
Well, what you're going to see is, I think one thing we didn't really get into a lot of discussion is there's a ton of Yacht Rock Disco.
Oh,
and like Chris CCM Disco stuff. Like,
what?
They did a ton.
Talk about worlds collide.
Here's the thing. CCM and disco were actually even better connected than Yacht Rock, I think, because you could say one sentence in a song and that's it. That could be a whole disco song. You know what I mean? So it was like a really easy way to, like, these gospel groups picked up on it quick. These R&B groups picked up on it quick that were Christian. Like, yeah, it was easy to fit with disco. It's like, bring a simple disco beat in.
Simplify your message.
Even if it was religious, it still sounded cool because it's disco. You know what I mean? DJ Fuzzy Logic, the guy I work with, you know, he's Prescott. He does a lot more into that area too. So I think he'll pull out some probably big gems too that I won't even have on my list because he'll be digging in a different direction than I do. We work in different methods.
All right. Well, I vote that we move into a lightning round and carry on the discussion after the lightning blast.
Now, this is a fully sanctioned lightning round, not what I tried to sneak in before I ceded my time.
Right.
Okay.
So I have a found at sea.
Supposed to do that before like I did.
No. I'm going to do my found at sea, and then I'm going to cede the rest of my time. I'm going to cede the rest of it to, as you said, the junior senator from Wisconsin. So as we were talking
Prescott
about
Prescott must
this,
be the senior senator, by the way.
So as we were talking about this, I thought that it would make sense for me to point out, even though it's not connected to the Yacht Rock era, it's much more current than that. I think the greatest Christian band that I have ever heard and the greatest song I've ever heard, which you'll see why this is found at sea, Hillsong United, and this is like there's the Stairway to Heaven of modern CCM, and it's called Oceans. So I found an ocean at sea. How do you like that?
Whoa.
What else are you going to find at sea?
Right? Exactly. They know how to produce sound. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Whether you're going to be into CCM or not, it's just the sonics of that. It's just awesome.
All right, John, you have a buried treasure for us.
The Winans were a really popular group in the 70s and 80s. Played them on our show already. All these groups we've played already on our show at some point in time. We're just bringing them all together for this episode. But they got a song called Secret Place that is just absolutely, I think it's dynamite. And I love Yacht Rock that flirts with R&B. I think it's, again, probably my favorite Yacht Rock stuff in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the song by the Winans, Secret Place, is really good. But, I mean, look into the Winans if you don't already know them. They were a family of musicians, kind of like DeBarge and stuff, too. That, again, they did a lot of tracks. They crossed over.
Yeah, they're big-time church family. Yep, and they did a lot of crossover, right?
Yeah, a lot of crossover.
Not to slap your hand right away, but that was a buried treasure, was it not?
Yeah.
Well, we need to know what you found at sea, sir.
Oh, I thought he said buried treasure.
I didn't know he was doing found at sea.
Oh, yes. He's found something at sea, which is quite interesting. Oh,
okay. What did you find at sea?
I had Amy Grant tomorrow. That's one of those ones, again, Amy Grant, everyone knows her. I think everyone knows her later. I mean, Baby, and that was obviously where she really gained momentum as a contemporary artist. But her early 80s stuff, I think, is really good. I got a couple of her albums from that time period. Again, you said Chris Christian involved in those albums. And that Michael W. Smith, another artist that came out a little bit later along those lines too, kind of broke out of that scene too around that same time in those early 80s. But that song Tomorrow, so again, I think it's, again, Yacht Rock without question. That just also happens to be a CCM song.
Interestingly enough, when we interviewed Chris Christian, I put him on the spot for our Found at Sea, and I said, give us the yachtiest Amy Grant song. no hesitation, Walking Away With You.
Okay.
In that song is Yachty as all He's get brilliant. Out.
I mean, I can't argue with him. You know, he knows his stuff.
All right.
Yeah, mine was Tomorrow. Again, that's the one I hear. Cool. I think immediately connects to Yacht Rock in my brain. But again, it's that there's a lot in that early 80s when they got to like 84, 85, 86. They were making Yacht Rock still in CCM, where it already kind of had died off. They were going harder on the synth and like, you know, guitar driven music by the time you got to the mid 80s from Yacht Rock guys.
Talk about doing the Lord's work, man. They're carrying the torch and keeping the fire. And all right. Should we go off the map?
Yeah, I got one here. DeGarmo and Key, they were actually pretty well known at some point. But again, I think for an average listener, the probably name you haven't seen, The Winans, Amy Grant, you've heard them. You know, you've maybe recognized their names if you've been a fan of 80s music. DeGarmo and Key, though, again, that album and that song, Long Distance Runner. It's just dynamite stuff. It's a good album. They look like, again, Dudettes are my favorite. I think I brought them up on your show before. I love Dudettes too. So when
tell people what a Dudette is.
Okay, a Dudette is a duo of two men who make music together. Like Hall & Oates.
Yeah, Hall & Oates. England Dan, like, John Ford Coley.
Yeah, Pages. You know, yeah, all those groups. Again, we did a whole episode on them. I wonder if you can go back and find it somewhere. Maybe, I don't know if you can or can't. But yeah, I just love when those it's something about it that's just unique.
Dudettes.
When two artists decide to like kind of partner up and work and collaboratively write together. It's been a big thing in music for years, but look, nowadays you don't see that as much as a popular idea. It's just this guy and that guy doing stuff together. It's not as big of a thing as it was back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, like we need to get Timberlake and Bruno Mars together or something.
Well, that's what Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars did, if you never listened to
their
stuff.
Right. That's
so
right.
Sonic stuff is so... That's my daughter is in love with that stuff, and she will not stop listening to
there
it. My daughter, Anna, Modern she loves Dudette. It. So, yeah. But, all right, but well, the Garmon Key, is great. That song.
Yeah, good selection. Very good. John Nixon, I wanted to put you on the spot to go off the map. So is there another artist besides Hillsong that you would want to cue listeners into who might like Yacht Rock? Doesn't have to be Yacht Rock, though, that is a good exemplar of could be worship music, could just be Christian music.
Well, Hillsong has kind of gone a little bit off the rails to a certain degree. I think musically they've lost their way a little bit, and they were taken over by a consortium of musicians out in the West that every year they do like a big sort of convention, and all these Christian artists from around the country come there, and they sort of all work together and influence each other. And so this is more than just there's one core group, but it can involve any of these other people from around the country. And that's called Bethel Music. And so if I were to play something that's worth hearing from Bethel Music, Goodness of God live.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's some Southern rock mixed with some CCM there for you.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, John O'Grady, for coming on and educating us and our listeners. If we were in prayer, we'd end the prayer probably with the word amen.
Right, but
we're not. So how do we end this?
Ahoy, polloi. What do you guys do? I don't know. That's what you guys do.